The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
To happiness, 'cause happiness is the road. Enjoy every moment of your life, and you can be happy without love, and you can be happy without God.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We have got a really awesome show for you today. This is going to be an award winner, I'm sure. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring an interview with Elsie Shemin Roth, whose father, William Roth, was recently awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously for his part in battlefield valor in World War I, believe it or not. It's just now they got around to giving him a medal. It is the portion of Shlach can be found in chapter 16 and following in the book of Numbers. We've got terrific music for you. We're opening and closing with a new CD from Eitan G. An exciting Hasidic story at the end. Very poignant. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. In what is becoming non-news, another rocket was fired from Gaza towards Ashkelon. The rocket this time fell short and exploded in Gaza. The missile was the fourth attack in the past week. In a 6-3 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Americans born in Jerusalem can no longer list their country of birth as Israel in U.S. passports. Usually when you look, it says in place of birth, so it says like the country, state, and if you're born out of the country, it says what the city, the state, and the country. So now it just says Jerusalem. The ruling invalidated a 13-year-old congressional law that said Americans born in Jerusalem could list Israel as their country of birth. Arson fires set by Arab terrorists in forests in the Judean hills are still burning out of control. Firefighters have been fighting the more than half dozen blazes since last Wednesday. Here's one that in my book fits in the category of a little bit too little too late, and really who cares, but maybe people do. Spain passed a law allowing descendants of Sephardic Jews, that means people who were originally from Spain, to become Spanish citizens. More than five centuries after their ancestors were expelled from the country, Jews were kicked out of Spain in 1492. This law will allow their descendants to move back to Spain. People have 3 years to apply, and they must show an ancestral link and pass the Spanish test. For those people who really want to do that and really want to be Spanish citizens. I could do that. My great-great-great-great-grandfather's name was Benvenista before he moved to Poland and changed it to Horowitz. It's on my mother's side. But I have no interest. 14 original works of art by Adolf Hitler Max Schumo are being sold in Germany at auction. The watercolors and drawing date to be between 1904 and 1922. The pieces are expected to be sold for between $1,100 and $50,000 each. A U.S. federal judge, speaking of art, a U.S. federal judge refused to hear a case involving the ownership of a painting, Rue Saint-Henri, après-midi à fête de pluie by Pissarro, which is in the Thyssen-Bornemisza Museum in Madrid. The judge said the ownership of the painting is Spain's business and America has no business being involved with it. The museum does agree that the Pissarro worth $10 million was stolen by the Nazis, but doesn't want to give it up. And finally, just in case you missed it, Friday was International Falafel Day. More than 350,000 people worldwide pledged to eat the Middle Eastern fried chickpea sandwiches on that day. I guess if you haven't, you could do that today. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Let's play a little music for you just to get you warmed up. This is Eighth Day. Their new song is called Celebrate. So let's celebrate.
You're sleeping, there's a smile deep within you. This song's for singing Rina. Shira Malois, Bishu Vashem, here we go again. Oh, ye know you look at home. It's like you're sleeping, there's a smile deep within you.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Schulfen, and here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Mrs. Elsie Shemin Roth, who we're going to talk about her father, Sergeant William Roth, and his receiving posthumously the National Medal of Honor. How are you today, Mrs. Roth?
I'm doing very well, Rabbi, and you?
Thank God, thank God. We're doing very, very well. Well, tell us about your dad. Why was he awarded? What did he do to get awarded the Medal of Honor from President Obama this month?
Okay. Well, the enlistment age in World War I was 21. My father was actually 18, and he wanted to go. He really wanted to honor our country by serving in the military. He's first generation from immigrants. His parents came from Russia. They were offered a wonderful home, professions, and they thrived. And he wanted in some way to pay back. But what could he do? He was 18, and the age was 21. So he told his parents that if he didn't sign for him, that he would never come home again. And he meant it. So begrudgingly, my grandfather did sign for him. So you have this 18-year-old going in saying that he's 21 years old. Actually, from the time he went in until the time he went to the front to actually engage the enemy was 7 months. That's it. Mm-hmm. He went to Camp Green where they took their basic training. 7 months later, he was in France. And it was horrendous fighting, brutal, brutal fighting for this teenager. And on the occasion, the actual citation generally says, and I'm not reading it in front of me, but on three different occasions, when the sun was shining and there was no cover and there was machine gun, heavy machine gun and rifle fire, he crossed an area of 150 yards to pick up three of his wounded comrades each time, going and bringing one back, then bringing him to safety, doing the same thing again, and yet doing the same thing again. And upon his return, the third time around, the platoon that he was with had wounded all of the officers, and non-commissioned officers were either dead or wounded, and there was no one to take charge of this platoon. In this case, the platoon was about 30 men. He then took charge of the whole platoon, led them all to safety. Now, he could have finished right there, but he didn't. He turned around and went back again to engage the enemy. And the next day, they found him unconscious. He was shot in the head right behind the ear and had shrapnel throughout his back. He was then brought to the hospital and remained there for at least three months.
Wow.
That's the citation.
Wow, that's pretty incredible that he would do such a thing.
Yes.
So did your dad tell you these stories when you were growing up?
Oh, no. Never once. There are three of us in the family. I'm the oldest of three. I have a brother. He's now deceased, and my sister. And we always remarked, he always talked about the Army and what life was like in the Army and his friends and the various activities and things, never once. And you knew to stay away from the topic. If you asked just even a little bit of a question that kind of edged on this action, you would always, there would be an answer that, you know, didn't quite make sense or a topic would be changed. It was just for his whole life. And this is par for the course with anybody that has seen horrendous action, especially at such a young age. He was 19 when this happened. It was too painful, much too painful to ever be spoken about. I know what I know from what I read. That's it. It was mm-hmm. written down what exactly the citation was.
These were official military accounts of the battles?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is... the official military account, because there were five people, five soldiers, that actually saw the action. That's the reason that my father was able to get the Medal of Honor. You have to see, and it has to be an officer. In World War One, an officer had to see the action. And this was something that always bothered my father. He said, I mean, nobody stands there and watches. You're in the middle of a battle, and this is not about medals. And that was a very big thing with my father, never about medals. But somebody has to see it and then recommend you. In my father's case, this was so amazing with what he did on the three occasions and then saving 30 more and then going back to battle, that there were three officers and three enlisted men vouched for what he did and wrote it up. So when we were, and my father saved the paperwork, which was a military, on military stationery, that's what got him the Medal of Honor. There are so many people out there that did amazing things, as amazing as my father, that never could be recommended because they didn't have the paperwork. There was no, you know, it was just hearsay. And the Army, of course, would not allow that. And in my father's case, he was given our nation's second highest award, but he was given that because there were too many people that saw the action. Had none seen the action, my father would have gotten nothing, absolutely nothing, because he was a Jew.
Okay, we're going to bring that up. I do see that for his heroism and the fact that he was wounded, so he did receive the Purple Heart and the Distinguished Service Cross for Battlefield Valor in December 29th, 1919, which is 6 weeks after World War One was over. So there was recognition of it.
Yes.
So
there was recognition of it because the Army could not deny, the anti-Semitism was just tremendous in World War One, because there were so many children of immigrants, and it was not only the Jews, it was the Italians, it was the Irish, and of course African Americans had it worse. They weren't even allowed to fight next to white. They were sent to the French troops. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. Here are American citizens that weren't allowed to fight side by side with white people. But in this case, there were too many people that saw my father's action. They had to give him something. Now, if none of this was reported, they would have given him nothing as a Jew. Mm-hmm. Nothing. That has happened over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
He did get the Distinguished Service Cross. He was very satisfied with that. The story is that, you know, I was sitting on the porch. It's not the story. It's what happened with a dear friend of my father's, Jim Pritchard is his name. He was a big, very handsome Irish cop. He was one of the men that my father saved. And the two of them were the dearest of the dearest friends, and they continued their relationship for years and years after the war. And he would come to visit. We were in the greenhouse and nursery business, so he would come and spend weekends with my father and all of us. And the two of them would disappear into the greenhouses and just be able to talk about what happened. That was the only time that each of them, because Jim Pritchard was in the same platoon that my father was. And one day I was on the porch visiting with Jim, just a wonderful gentleman. I was about 12 years old, and he said to me that, you know, you're old enough now to understand this. I just want you to know I was there. I was one of the ones that your father saved. And because he was a Jew, he never got the medal that he deserved. He really deserved the Medal of Honor. So I went back to my father and I said, is this true? And my father said, yes, it's true. He said, but anti-Semitism was a way of life. That's what he said. It just was a way of life. He said, but this was not about medals. It never was about medals. I'm honored and satisfied to receive our nation's second highest award, which was the Distinguished Service Cross. End of conversation. I never really brought it up again because it was very painful for him to discuss. And since he made it very clear, you know, where he stood on this, that was it. But I read the citation, and it seemed so much above and beyond and so amazing that even as a child, I made the mental note that just didn't seem right. Also, with anti-Semitism, my father was a big guy. In those days, 5'10 and a half, 190 of solid muscle was considered a big guy. He also was a boxer and a wrestler. He was a long-distance swimmer. He played semi-pro baseball. And at Syracuse, after the war was over, those that were wounded were given a GI Bill, but you had to be wounded in World War I to be able to get a GI Bill. So he went to Syracuse University, and there he played varsity football and lacrosse. So anybody that would engage my father, with some anti-Semitism, you would almost feel sorry for that person because there would be very little left of him. So of the person that tried to engage my father, you should have seen him in action. He was tremendous.
Okay.
Is that the long?
Got it. Yeah. So if you're just joining in, our guest is Elsie Sherman Roth. Her father recently, beginning of the month, received the nation's highest award, the Medal of Honor, from President Obama for the U.S. Army and the United States. Did your father display the medals that he did receive, the cross and the
Medal of Valor? Oh, yes, indeed. They were on our walls, all of them. I mean, there were so many other medals that were given, too, because he fought in France, and at such a high level, he had the Legion of Honor, which was a wonderful recognition from France. And by the way, I guess for the 50th anniversary of World War I, the 4th Division, which is where my father fought, my father was asked to represent the 4th Division to go back to France and place a wreath on a major memorial that was there. There were pictures of him still standing straight and tall, crippled that he was. It was a beautiful honor. My father also was very active in veterans affairs, realizing how difficult it was to make the transition, from seeing so much at such a young age, that he was constantly helping veterans find jobs. Those that needed medical help, he would pick them up and take them personally to doctors and specialists. This was just a way of life. He also, because in the 30s, the Bund was very active near where we lived, and there were fights. My father and his friends would go to these Bund meetings. They were horribly anti-Semitic, and they were just fist fights. I remember my father coming home bloody. I mean, it was so frightening for us children to see that. He then formed a post for the Jewish war veterans. I remember it even him. I'm 86 years old, and I remember Post 226 in the Bronx, founded by my father, so that all of these men from World War, Jewish men from World War I, could get together as a group, as a military group, and confront these Bundes and Father Coughlin, and indeed they did.
Mm-hmm.
So he continued. He was always a veteran. I mean, he was always a proud soldier. To the day he died, he was erect and tall and a very proud soldier.
Mm-hmm. But he never wanted to pursue getting the Medal of Valor.
No.
Is that correct?
No, and it was never brought up. I was the one that brought it up. And no, definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't as if, you know, we had conversations that you deserve the Medal of Honor. We really want to pursue this. He would always come back, and I could see, this is not, you don't fight for your country for a bunch of medals. You fight because you care about this, our country, very much, and you're willing to put your life on the line as he did. That's what it was about. But I felt, as a Jew, and from the research that I did, and from Jim Pritchard, who directly told me this, this was one of the three men there that said that my father saved his life, and Jim knew what he did. He watched the platoon be saved. He knew the other two men that were saved. And by the way, we just found, from all the publicity about this, this went all over the world. It went viral. Guess what? We got a call from the Pritchard family, which was just so amazing. And for 2.5 hours, we spoke together. And Jim's son, who is my age now, said that the Sherman name has been a household name forever. and they are in debt to my father forever. Mm. And I'm talking about my recollection of Jim. Our family just loved him so much. Jim gathered his whole family from age 8 years, I guess a great-grandson, to other siblings. And you know what they did, Rabbi? When we were about to ring off after talking about various things that I remembered and what they remembered about my father, they all said, this little voice came on and said, thank you for my life. And the next one would say, thank you for my life. And then the next one would say, thank you for my life. There were 15 of them there that thanked me because of my father saving Jim for their lives. I just, you know, it was so touching to hear that. So we have the Pritchard family back with us again, and how wonderful is that, too?
Mm, you've left the rabbi speechless. Anyway, so your father passed away in 1973.
Yes.
And never did get the Medal of Valor and was not interested in pursuing it. So tell us, fill in the details between 1973 and 2015, please, Elsie.
Well, I always looked for something, and there was nothing out there that I could gather to, you know, I had all of this information, all this backup material.
Let me interrupt you just very quickly. Were your sibs involved with this also, your brother and sister?
No, I was the only one. Because I left the New York area. I married a Cincinnatian, so I moved to Cincinnati. And then from Cincinnati to St. Louis. I've been in St. Louis 50-some-odd years. But I've always looked for, I always felt this was a great injustice. I knew also from my research and talking to people that knew the climate of World War One that this anti-Semitism was a horrendous thing. I knew what my father's citation was. I compared it to other Distinguished Service Cross citations. And my father's rose so far above the others. And my father also directly said, yes, there was anti-Semitism, but I took care of business. That's it. I took care of business. Let's move on with this. But anyway, there was the World War II Leonard Kravitz Veterans Act came out in 2002. And their Jewish veterans had an opportunity to get that felt that there was anti-Semitism in any of the citations they had, or if they deserved a citation and didn't get it because they were Jews. It was open for 1 year. You could bring your credentials and have a real congressional review. Guess what? I jumped on that like you wouldn't believe. But guess what, Rabbi? They turned me away because this is World War II. I was so horrified. I said, what is the difference in discrimination between World War I, World War II? I mean, the French and the, who cares? Discrimination is disgusting at any time. They could never give me an answer. Never, never give me an answer. So here, again, I was back to square one because I was discrimination in World War I, and still no answer anywhere. Well, I called the Jewish war veterans, and they really weren't all that helpful to see, do you have connections? What can you do? But they did give me a gift. They gave me Colonel Erwin Burtnick, who is a real advocate for veterans, and he also knew what the climate was in World War I. He's an expert, and he's an expert in medals and citations, and he called me. And he said, well, they told me at the headquarters here that you needed some help. Let me see what this is about. Send me the citation. I sent it. He calls me back in 2 minutes, and he says, I've reviewed 200 of these. None has reached the level of the Medal of Honor or even the Distinguished Service Corps. This is Medal of Honor. And so he said, what you need to do now is go to your congressman. I did go to my congressman, the big ones, and they all either never returned calls, whatever. But I was living in this little town in Labadie, Missouri, and my congressman was there. I decided to try him. And he read the citation, and he spoke with Erwin Burtnick, and he said, I'm going to do this. And so that's Blaine Luchtmeyer, my congressman. So between the two of them, Well, it was 8 years up to the point of Burtnick going nowhere. Then 5 years with the help of Colonel Burtnick and Blaine Luthmeyer, my congressman, and myself. 13 years of working with my congressman. We had a bill that we opened it again for World War One, and it was named after my father. It was the William Sheman World War One Veterans Act that now opened it up for anyone in World War One that wanted congressional review. That was the only way that we could get this done, to have my father's. We attached it to a defense bill that we knew would sail right through, and that's exactly what happened. The defense bill sailed through, and my father's bill was attached to it, and it was a done deed. Now we had to get the serious review. So we were reviewed three times to be vetted each time it passed. Then we were reviewed by the Secretary of the Army. It passed. Then we were reviewed by the Secretary of Defense. It passed. And then it sat on the President's desk. And the President also would review it. This took 5 years to do. Watching, pushing, why aren't you paying attention? It's been there 8 months and it's not going anywhere. You know, all that. That's what it took. It took weekly pushing to get this job done. And in the speech that I gave at the Pentagon, they asked me to speak, as they did ask the representative for Private Henry Johnson, an African-American. We both got the Medals of Honor posthumously, side by side. Is that amazing? One a Jew. One is anti-Semitism, the other is racism.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were, side by side. How beautiful that was. And he had Charles Schumer working on this for him, too. And it's been a long, hard struggle. But it's done. It's done with both of us. And the Army has bent over backwards to take responsibility for this. In fact, I've been invited to West Point to talk to the young men and women that will be officers, so that I can tell my story and they can remember that the minute they see anti-Semitism anywhere, they're going to crush it. They're going to finish it right then and there.
Hopefully.
And the Army wants me to do this, and I'm honored to do it.
Do you feel your father has been vindicated now?
Yes. Oh, most definitely. You know, Rabbi, I have 11 words here that tell the story. This is it. Discrimination hurts. A wrong has been made right. All is forgiven.
That's very
That
poignant.
Virtually is the whole story in 11 words.
Okay. Can I ask you, where do you have the medal now?
The medal is sitting right here. I'm in my kitchen, and it's in its box. And it's going to be taken to the Federation building here for the Jewish community to see it. And then I have all kinds of veterans groups all over that want to see it. And I'll be doing a lot of speaking engagements on behalf of my father and this story. And as I said, this story can only happen in America. Only in America could this story happen. 13 years later, of my own fight, and 97 years later, my father would receive the Medal of Honor. And truly, it's such an honor.
Indeed. Okay, that's going to wrap us up. We want to thank you for coming on and sharing this, and I hope that our listeners feel as inspired and moved as I am, and wish you continued success, and let us know if you're going to be dropping by our neighborhood in Detroit anytime soon.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. I appreciate the opportunity to share this momentous experience with all of you and your listeners in Detroit and wherever.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting me very much.
That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Wow, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. I am, like I said, beyond words. I have to compose myself. So to do that, we're going to play a little music. This is called The Soul of Klezmer. It's from Madrid, believe it or not. And we're going to listen to a piece called The Wedding Song.
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Schulteman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We've got time for one more. This is brand spanking new. According to my calculations, it's less than 48 hours old. This is Blue Melody. We play some of their stuff before, which is an interesting group. What they do is they have this venue. I'm not exactly sure where it is. And it's a bunch of musicians. And they invite people to come and perform with them. And then they post it to YouTube. And they've got a whole bunch of famous people. This person that they're playing with now, his name is Ismael Lumanovsky. I'm not sure the background on him, but his place is a traditional Jewish Uzbek type piece. It's called Usak. Let's listen in. It's just for you.
Thank you.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Hey, Shulfim, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Korach. There is, every time a portion of Korach comes around, I'm reminded of a joke. This is a rabbinic joke. Now, I was told, be careful about telling jokes because you might offend somebody with your joke, but I don't think anybody living would actually be offended by this joke. But, and it's not even that really good a joke. During, 200 years or so, or 300 years that the Jews are living in Central and Eastern Russia, there's really no form of entertainment per se. And what would happen is they had these itinerant preachers that would come into town and they would speak to the people and having nothing else to do. So they'd go and they listened to them. So there was one such preacher and they would get, they pass around the hat and this is how these preachers made their living. There's one such preacher and unfortunately for him, he only had one speech and it was about the portion of Korach. So it's good for this week, but what do you do next week? The week after, last week? So he traveled around with an old dog. And he would leave the dog outside the synagogue where the speech was being given. And the dog would start barking. And he would yell at the dog, be quiet, I need you like Korach. And Korach was not such a great guy. And then he'd say, oh, I just reminded myself, since I'm talking about Korach. And he'd go into this whole speech about Korach. That's a rabbinic joke. I know it's a real knee slapper. I can just imagine you're just like sitting at home, you know, just like your sides are splitting. And be careful when you're driving on the road, you know, don't your eyes tear up too much. But at the end of the portion of Korach, towards the end of the portion, Aaron is told, listen, we don't want anybody making claims to your lineage again. Korach challenged God, basically, Moses and Aaron, and said, well, I want to be a Kohen. I want to be a high priest. Which in itself is not really such a bad thing. Everybody should want to experience. I'd like to go into the Holy of Holies and see what was doing over there. If there was such a thing around right now, just like, wow, what is this stuff? Experience what Nadav and Avihu experienced before they OD'd on God. Yeah, that sounds like something to do, but I don't recommend it at home, folks. So Aaron was told to take his walking stick. Everybody knows about walking sticks. People back then had walking sticks. Everybody had these things. And to plant it into the soil of the sanctuary, this movable edifice that traveled with them in the desert, and all the other leaders of the tribes, all the other princes of the tribes, were to plant their walking sticks in the ground in a circle around Aaron's. So there were 12 sticks surrounding Aaron's stick. The next day, they came back, and lo and behold, Aaron's stick had budded, produced leaves, produced flowers, and produced almonds, ripe almonds, ready for the picking. They then took Aaron's stick and they put it into the Holy of Holies where it remained until the prophet Jeremiah came and hid all those things somewhere with the ensuing destruction of the first temple by Nebuchadnezzar. And I suppose Aaron at that point needed a new walking stick. You know, if your stick is suddenly growing, what are you going to do, you know? Well, look, it might come in handy for like a little snack on the road, but, you know, a little almond here, there, and there. I'm sure the Almond Commission in California would love such a thing. But that's the deal. Now, let's analyze this story in the few moments that we have remaining. So The question is asked, why almonds of all things? And the answer is very simply is because almonds grow the fast. From budding to fruition for an almond is 21 days. It is the fastest fruit from start to finish. The word in Hebrew for almonds is shkedim, comes from the word shakad, which means to be fast, to be diligent. In Hebrew, things mean what they are rather than just called what they are. We were told before the giving of the Torah, Va'atem tiyu li mamleches kohanim v'goy kodesh, that you are going to be a nation of kohanim, a nation of priests, a holy nation. Which means, okay, so my last name isn't Cohen. I don't get called up to the Torah as a Cohen. I don't have the rights, privileges, or responsibilities of a Kohen. But as far as attitude goes, when it comes to my relationship with God and God's relationship with me, I'm a Cohen. And it's not like the old Myron Cohen joke, look, Mama, a captain is. Sonny, to me, you're a captain. To you, a captain. But that captain, you're no captain. No. This is serious. Our relationship with Hashem is that of being a primary servant. God didn't make any specific individual or group better than anybody. And okay, so in the temple times, there are people who are designated. They're the ones who are going to work. Okay, good. That doesn't make them better. That just means that they have a different responsibility than I do. God gave us talents. And that's what we have to be a Kohen with. Pardon me ending a sentence with a preposition. If you can play the piano, then you have to be a Kohen by playing the piano. If you're a business magnate, then you have to be a Kohen by being a business magnate. If you can cook up a storm, you have to be a Kohen by cooking up a storm. Whatever it is that God gave you, your ability, you have to use that with the same diligence and alacrity which was displayed by Aaron. And what made Aaron really so special, more than just his putting his nose to the grindstone and his shoulder to the wheel and whatever other expressions and cliches you'd like to throw at people, Aaron loved everybody and was loved by everybody. So yeah, play the piano, be a business magnate, make lots of food, but make sure you're doing it for the other person. Not just to show everybody the talent that you have. We've got to take a quick commercial break, and we're going back. We'll be back in a moment with the Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Marshall Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? RabbiFinman.com. You know it by now. I've been saying it now. When did Rabbi Finman come up? 2001. Yeah, so, wow. Just occurred to me that I was on air for like 5 years with no way of anybody getting really in touch with me except through letter writing, because that's when I set up RabbiFinman.com in 2001. We revamped it in 2009, and we're constantly updating it as we speak. And this week's show will be on RabbiFinman.com in about, hopefully within 2 hours. I have to do that manually. That doesn't happen automatically. Automatic is iTunes and Stitcher and JCast Network. Those are automatic. That's already, by 1 o'clock, it's already up and done, which is in an hour and change. You also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, messages and insights into the Torah, a portion of the weekend stories, conveyed by yours truly. You also have the very important donations page, and I appreciate it. We're really going for the gold over here, your gold. We paid off May this month. Yes, give yourself a hand. Terrific. We still have a couple of weeks. We've got 2 weeks left. We can still do June. I love it that people are coming through. I appreciate every dollar that comes in. Lady sent me $5 cash in an envelope at 14,000 West 9 Mile Road. Greatly appreciated. Do it. Go to the computer, rabbifinman.com, click on a number, donate today. Don't even worry about it. That's how what a wonderful thing it is for you. And I want to thank all those people, or maybe you want to thank me, I don't know, all those people who called in last week about the theme of Shalom Aleichem. I sent out many CDs this week, and I hope you've gotten them already. And if you haven't, well, the last batch went on Thursday, so we did send one a little bit further, but that was earlier in the week. And you should all have them, and thank you so much. Maybe we'll do something like that again sometime. I'll come up with a theme. Or if you got a theme, suggest it to me. Contact me at rabbifinman.com, and we'll see what I can do. That was an easy one, because peace upon you is like a Jewish theme. Do it today. Okay. Man came to the Bubba of a Rebbe, Rabbi Halberstam. This is over 100 years ago. And the Rebbe and him were talking about their businesses, his business, and how he runs it. And he says, the Rebbe says to him, so tell me your day. He says, well, he wakes up, he does his morning, his early morning prayers. Then he goes, runs to the market, to buy his needed wares for the day, you know, buy wholesale, sell retail. Then he goes to pray. And then after he does it, he stops in the middle, he goes to pray in the afternoon, and he has a class at night that he attends every night. And he starts the whole thing over again the next day. So the Rebbe asked him, why do you go to the market before you go to pray? I mean, God comes first, no? He says, well, he's concerned that when he gets to the market, that maybe the best stuff won't be there, or maybe there won't be anything there at all, and he'll be left with nothing. I won't be able to make a living that day. Which shows how vicarious people lived. I mean, you know, so we don't even understand that one. So the Babavar Rebbe told him a parable. He says it was a man who was a teacher. And he had to go away for a year or so at a time. And his wife would buy stuff on credit, and he'd come back and pay for it. And he would work, and he would get paid in certain amounts. And as he would get certain amounts, so he would change it to a bigger coins. He'd be paid in certain small. He'd get paid, say, like in copper. And when he'd get enough copper, he would change it into nickel. He would get enough nickel, he would change it into silver. Enough silver, he'd change it into gold. So he had four bags. One was gold, silver, copper, and nickel. So he's traveling back, and he realizes that if he's going to stay someplace for Shabbos, who's he going to give his money back to hold to onto? So he turned to the Jewish innkeeper and said, could you watch my money for me? He said, sure, fine, no problem. I have a safe place. We have a strong box. We'll keep it in there. This man, this teacher, was so nervous. His year's savings, his allotment for the entire year was in this man who he didn't know who he was. Maybe he's going to steal it. He didn't know. There's no receipt. There's no nothing. Right away, Saturday night, he came to the man and said, can I have my money? The guy said, sure, no problem. And the man, the teacher, right in front of the innkeeper, started counting the gold bag. And then we got through with the gold. He counted the silver, then he counted the nickel, then he counted the copper. So the innkeeper said to him, if you saw that the gold was all there, why did you waste your time counting the silver, copper, and nickel? That's where the story ended with the Bubba of a Rebbe. So the Bubba of a Rebbe said to him, look, you entrusted your soul to the Almighty. You went to sleep last night. You woke up. You said, Mode Ani. And you said, thank you for returning my soul. That's the gold. If you trust God that he's going to return your gold, wouldn't he give you your livelihood for the day? That's the copper and silver, the copper and nickel. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I certainly did. I enjoyed it more than I'm supposed to, but I had a great time. I hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
What puts you at risk for identity theft? Do you bank online or go to the doctor? Banks and health insurers can be susceptible to breaches of your private information.